Fighters, it's time for the Thursday Q&A episode here on the Contractor Fight Podcast. We take your questions and we answer them here on the show. Send your questions to help@thecontractorfight.com with the subject line podcast to get your questions in front of us. Tom and I will pick the questions that are the most relevant to the people here in the fight. You guys rock. Let's do this. It is about that time once again. Excited to hang out with you guys here a little bit today. My wingman Dan is hopping on here in a second, so we'll add him here to the live stream in a minute. All right, so guys, welcome to the Contractor Fight Q&A episode. Dan and I are going to field some questions, so if you have a question about your business, go ahead and throw it in the box. And as Roz just said, visit StreamYard.com/Facebook. If you're on Facebook, to grant StreamYard permission to show your name. Tom's trying to look younger. Yeah, I'm not looking any younger right now, that's for sure. So yeah, while I wait for any questions to come in, Nicole did bring up HGTV. So if you guys don't know, this Saturday, the 8th of January, I'm pulling up the link here real quick. 8th January at 9:01 p.m. Eastern time is what they're telling me. The show Unfinished Business, I just put the link in the chat box there. The show premieres. We have 4 episodes for the first season, and then they're going to evaluate and see if anyone gave a crap. And if they did, we'll probably get multiple seasons. So there you go. So if you're into that stuff, and I want to be clear here, I've been explaining this to people, but Dan, you know this. People are like, oh, I can't wait. It's a Contractor Fight on HGTV. Tom's going to go in there, F-bomb everybody, and throat punch them. And that is not the gig, you guys. That I was hired as a host. The Contractor Fight was not hired. They found me on YouTube, and last year we filmed, and I'm simply just a host. I get to be myself, very much myself, but they edit things, so who knows what comes out, right? It is what
just
it is.
Just a kinder, gentler Tom.
Yes, it is. So, all right. So I got a question here from Ernesto. Any suggestions on courses to be a better, more encouraging leader in my business? Well, right out of the gate, dude, I would do a couple things. Check out anything by John Maxwell. He's the guru on leadership. First of all, read his shit. Second thing is read Winning the Contractor Fight. If you don't already have it, I talk a lot about leading your people in there. And then my coach is a guy named Ben Newman, who has a book called Uncommon Leadership. So I would start with those things and just consume that stuff, man. There's a lot of good stuff out there. And then I guess the advice I would give Ernesto here also, Dan, would just, if you wanted to be a better leader, is be the example, right? Like I am so much more convinced through the years that if you want anyone to give a crap about you and follow you, you got to lead the way, and you got to set the example. If you're getting on your guys for not having their stuff dialed in and, you know, being disciplined and filling their shit out, then look in the mirror. Are you doing the same things?
Yeah, no shit.
You probably are dropping the ball in some discipline, and it's really hard to call your people higher when you're not the example. That's my first take. So
yeah, and then just, you know, we've all worked for people or have had leaders that lead us in the past. So put yourself in their shoes and, you know, lead the way you would want to be led. And it's and just fucking start doing it. There's all these books in the world. Those books aren't you. So kind of get that collective knowledge, but just start implementing this shit and you'll find your way.
Well, I think consistency is huge too. A lot of people make the mistake. They're like, oh, this is the year I'm going to be a better leader and train my people and have meetings. You have 2 or 3 meetings and then you let something, you know, prevent you from having a meeting one of the weeks. And then it starts the habit. Most of us don't, when we're having a problem with our culture and our people taking ownership and stuff, it's our fault as a leader, mostly because we lack clarity or we lack consistency, one of the two. So, all right, Garrett, let's see. What the questions I have is, when you describe you need to charge for 1 hour operation and use the spreadsheet, how do you carry this information over to the spreadsheet of the job cost? I guess what I mean is, should I take that number and put that in the section for what I charge hourly? Because then the ads, okay. So basically, everyone's using the what to charge worksheet right now, trying to figure that out. So Garrett, what I would do is, you just know from that sheet what it needs to be. And then on the job costing sheet, there's the thing where you could do the labor multiplier, okay, where it's a 2.0 or a 2.5 or a 3 times your labor cost. I would just fart around with that multiplier until on the left, I know it's hard, you're not seeing it right now, on the left it says hourly sales price or something like that. So I would just adjust the multipliers until your hourly is where it needs to be. Just keep it simple like that.
Rodney's got a follow-up on that. Rodney, just put your office time, your overhead time in overhead, put your field time, because I know you work in the field as well, in your field hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the what to charge. So Rodney's question, just for those listening to the podcast that Dan answered, was when calculating the what to charge worksheet, am I supposed to include my owner's salary and my overhead? Previously, I pay myself hourly, bill to jobs, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and I, Dan, I had that situation before where I paid myself in both.
Right.
You know, I paid myself, and this is what I always recommend, is pay yourself, you know, in the overhead as the owner. And then if you're working in the field, what would you be paying somebody to work in the field? You need to account for those hours. So in a lot of ways, you're double dipping as the owner, which is cool. And then when you hire somebody
up for growth.
Yeah. And then when you hire somebody to replace you in the field, you know, then you've already been accounting for that money, you know? So, all right, let me go back up here. Appreciate the, you guys weighing in here today, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Sheet metal 101. What should I do if I'm losing passion for my business? Tired of not being able to find people to help scale. Hard to find the skilled people. Yeah, it is. Boy, I have a lot of thoughts.
I get where you're coming from with that question. And it really, but, and Tom, you touched on this on your live, whenever that fucking was, last night or the night before, I don't remember, but it's all going to radiate out of you. So if you're approaching your business disinterested or bitter, and you're just kind of casting out shade on the world that these no one wants to work, or I can only find shitheads. It's like, that's what you're going to find. So firstly, you just have to center yourself on what you like about your business, get positive, and then start throwing that shit out in the universe. Because otherwise, you find what we look for. So that'd be my starting point.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to lose. I mean, I don't know the context of your business here, man, but you know, if you're not making the money you need to, even without finding people, if you're not making money right now, if your gross profit isn't strong and where it needs to be, you know, if you're just not fulfilling the commitments that you're making to yourself throughout the days and the weeks, that's going to steal your passion. And so this goes back to, you know, Dan, we talk all the time in the fight about our FW day, we call it. And it's like a circle, you guys. You get your oxygen first, you know, then you feed your people. That's your immediate family and your team. You give to them, and then you build your kingdom. You work on your business, and then you stack the small, like, additional little things compound over time. And so that's what we call our FW day. So sheet metal 101, I would, whether you find people or not right now, start having fun yourself in the business and finding ways to win. Winning's fun.
Yeah. And that FW day is a daily thing, right? Like you've got a pretty detailed regimen for your day, and I've mirrored it, and it works. And it's, again, it's just like a computer, right? Garbage in, garbage out. It's the same thing with us. So you got to feed yourself good thoughts, and then you can rally it from there on out.
Yeah. And Dan, you hit on this before. I'm going to go a little deeper. Is, you know, he's sitting there tired of not being able to find people. That is such a, I acknowledge it's harder to find people. It's funny because, like, the rest of the world's going, oh, it's really hard to find people. The trades, we've known that for years. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, however, here's perspective. And we've had a couple podcast interviews and stuff with people over the last few days. And I think it was Chris Treese who was like, you know, Chris needed 90 projects to hit his $4 million sales goal or whatever this year in 2022. Yeah. And at first he's like, oh my God, I got to do 90 projects that are such and such size. And he's like, well, wait a minute. I live in a town of, what, 500,000 people. His service area, he's like, surely there's 90 people that will pay me that amount of money to do this. So it was just a mental switch. And then the jobs start rolling in. And same thing with your employees, you guys, like, if you just tell yourself over and over, nobody wants to work, your brain will find evidence to support what you tell it. But if you flip that script, sheet metal, and go, I don't know what city you're in, but if you're like, man, I know there's 4 people out of 500,000 people that would love to come work for me, and they want to work hard and this and that. And I think you'd be surprised, pleasantly surprised, how quickly you'll start attracting that to yourself. And the other thing I would say is, I don't know what you're, again, I don't know all the context here, but I don't know what you've been doing. Are you building your brand consistently? Are you in front of the community? Are you in touch with past customers? Do you have a careers page on your website? Are you putting on your own job fairs? Yes, your own job fair. Okay. Tap all your contractor buddies on the shoulder, rent a hotel space, and send it out to the news stations and the radio station. We're having a contractor's job fair. All right. And market the shit out of that thing. All right. A lot of our problems with this, with finding people, you guys, we're just not consistent. You know, we hire when we need people instead of hiring all the time. Yep. So you just got to tell yourself a different story that you're going to fix this shit, man. Hey, fighters, listen, we surveyed our membership in the contractor fight, and 97% of the fighters in our groups said that they would love to see a combination of our Shinfu sales training and our 100K contractor program. And so heading into 2022, that's what we did. We have done away with the Shinfu Mastermind. We've done away with the 100K contractor program, and we have combined the best of both of those programs into one new program for 2022 and beyond called Battleground. This is a place where we help you grow your business through learning how to market and sell and lead and know your numbers, you know, your mindset. I could go on and on and on, guys. This is the most powerful program, the most impactful program. I'm super excited about it. I want to invite you to go to thecontractorfight.com/battleground and check out what we have going on there. Contractorfight.com/battleground and jump in, man. You get our Shinfu training, you get our foundations video program, you get marketing bootcamp, you get all the monthly calls and access to coaches. And guys, I could go on and on. Just go to the link, check out what you get there, and let's quit playing games. Let's grow your business in 2022. You guys rock. Let's do this. All right.
There was a good one in here somewhere. I lost it. Something about new to business. Do you start off at 50% GP, or do you punish yourself for a couple decades undercharging until you're in trouble?
Oh, all right, here it goes. This, 940 construction. So, great question from 940 construction here. Do you start out with 50% profits with your brand still in its infancy, or do you build it up to it as your brand builds? Well, I know our answer. You want to go first?
I know. Yeah, I say build the brand you want right from the start and save yourself the punches in the dick that a lot of us have done over the years, and just start making money. So there's no better time than the present to get going at that. And it's a lot easier conversation to have with new customers as you start going forward than like what I had to do. I had 10-year customers. I'm like, hey, man, guess what? My prices have doubled. You know, how do you feel about that? That's a much harder conversation. So start right.
It's about positioning, right? Dan mentioned it. He's like, build your brand the way you want it to be. Position yourself as not the cheap guy. I did a video on YouTube, you guys, not too long ago. I forget the name of it, but I think it was about how to market your services or sell your services as the new guy. And I talk a little bit about that. Just, I think being the new guy is an advantage. I think you're hungrier. I think people want to give new people a chance. And if you're dialed in and you're communicating well, it doesn't matter if you're a brand new business or an established business. You learn how to market and sell properly and connect with people's motive and all that stuff. The money's irrelevant. You'll be knocking it out of the park, man.
Yeah. And the flip side, you're going to, as you're learning how to run a business and do your numbers and all that stuff, you're going to need that extra margin to make up for mistakes and, and things that come around. It's a hell of a lot easier when you got money in your pocket.
Yep. Let's continue the Q&A here with Mike. Here's the issue. You just find out one of your staff members is using office time, utilities, and resources to work on other projects. What do you do? I first figure out what my employee handbook says. Because hopefully you have that, you have your employee handbook and you've gone over this when you onboarded your new employee that you don't use company time and shit like that for side projects. Mm-hmm. I don't know what other projects means, Mike. If it's like other construction projects and stuff, then I think I have two answers. The first answer is you cut them loose, you chop their head off and get rid of them, right? And I don't mean that
semi-literal. Like,
yeah. I mean, you axe their ass from your company, right? That's my number one first reaction. However, what I've learned through the years, that still might be the outcome. But one of the ways I've changed over the years in the leader is I want to understand somebody's context before I start making 100%. Judgments, things like that. I don't know what's going on in their life and things like that. So, you know, Dan, I might, if Dan were the employee, I might come up and just go, hey, Dan, what's going on with this stuff? Help me understand what's happening here, just so I'm not making stories up in my mind, and have a conversation about it, and then do whatever you feel is appropriate.
Yeah, that comes back to when we talk about company meetings, when it talks about leadership, is just being keyed into your people's lives, making sure that you're all pulling in the same direction, getting so that they know that their dreams are in reach by helping you reach your own. But yeah, I my first question, I would have my shitty first draft, and then I would walk around the block, and I'd walk in, and yeah. I'd figure out what's going on. Why are you looking for other jobs? You know, not enough money, not enough hours. Like, I'm an asshole as a boss. Whatever it is, figure out that root thing. Assuming this guy's worth keeping too. Like, you know, sometimes you are thankful these opportunities show up to get rid of people. But yeah, that's where I would start. Like we say, it's like good people are hard right now. If it's a good human that just needs a little bit tweaking, a little straighten some edges out and realign things, then I'd start there.
Yep. John Loudon, what's up, brother? Your question cut off. So I don't know if you want to throw it in there again, and I'll come back to it. Part of it was cut off. John is a question about not hitting 50 in a project. Jean-Francois, my French is not very good. Sorry. Is it important to have the logo and the website to do the business? Well, if you're going to have a real business, I think it's very important to have a real company identity and branding campaign and strategy. And certainly there's a lot of people that do things as a side hustle and are content doing that. So, you know, now, do you need to have it all to start? No, I didn't have any of that when I started. I literally printed my last name on a business card with a phone number and said Painter, and started walking around and handing it out. And as I started making money, then I invested in, you know, the company identity and all those things. And I funded all my marketing efforts, you know, from me getting out there and door knocking and stuff. So,
yeah, I think a lot of us did that. And I think it's a little more prudent to go in with a defined role, what you're trying to be as a company and things like that. So just kind of pissing in the wind and shooting anything. So if you are a company, you are a brand, you need to be branded.
I mean, I always use the example of like Tide, laundry detergent, or Coke, McDonald's. Everybody on the planet pretty much knows those companies. Yet yeah. They still market their tails off. They still run ads and commercials, and they're active on social media. And they're, you know, because if you're not out there branding and marketing your business and telling a story, you're irrelevant. And, you know, and if the big brands that have the big deep pockets and stuff are doing that, you know, then what makes us think that we shouldn't be doing that as a small business, right? So we just do it on a micro level in our own communities as contractors, and you could totally crush it. Mm-hmm. And it's never been easy with these little things that we carry around in our pocket that are like super computer movie studios and things like that. So it's never been easier to build your brand. Fighters, Megan wrote in and she said, we use Nice Job. You can link it directly to your social media, website, Google page, et cetera. They send an email or text, and all the customer has to do is open it up, choose a star rating, and write anything they choose. It's super easy and user friendly. If you're struggling getting reviews, which will in turn help you get more high profit work, then go to thecontractorfight.com/nicejob and sign up today. All right. You want to take that next one, Dan?
Where are we at, Tom? I have my glasses on, so this is all just a mess of blur.
Frain, what's up, buddy? Painter, kick-ass human being. You see it there?
I'm getting there.
All right. My dogs are barking upstairs, going crazy. You don't got it? All right.
No, here we go. My refresh.
He wants to know, what are the biggest threats and opportunities you guys foresee in the construction business in the next 3 to 5 years? Congrats on the show. Thanks, man. What do you think, Dan?
I think your limiting beliefs are your biggest threat, to be honest. Like none of this shit, the asshole in the White House, whoever that may be in the coming years, nothing outside your head really matters. It's like I operate. I'm a painter too. You can't swing a dead cat without hitting 100 painters where I live. And I operate like I'm the only painter in town. It's like the only price that matters is Dan's price. The only service matters, it's Dan's service. And that's just the way I roll. So I would encourage you to do the same, not get hung up in market price or what these other guys are doing. Cause I can tell you most people are idiots. And I was an idiot myself until I figured it out. So that's my answer, honestly. The rest of it is, inflation affects everybody the same. Labor market affects everybody the same. So it's a level playing field. And it's just up to you. Like, how do you differentiate yourself? And how do you just move yourself mentally past all that bullshit so it doesn't matter to you?
Yeah, I agree with all that. I would add a couple actual tactical examples or whatever. That's not even it, but like real life tangible examples, I would say. Other than that, one of the biggest threats is, will contractors take advantage of this time right now that I call the golden years and really set themselves up for success? Because at some point, the economy is going to take a dump and it's going to take a hit to contractors and things like that. It always does. There's always ups and downs. So I think the biggest threat right now is not stepping on the gas, not increase. If you're adding high value to people, here's the caveat, because a lot of you guys give me shit over this. If you're adding high value and you're delivering a great experience and great service, then you need to charge a ton more money. Okay. You should be making 50, 60, 70% gross profit. You go out and buy a damn pair of sunglasses and there's a 200% gross profit, you know, like shoes and all these other things. Everything's marked up like crazy, you guys. And I think the opportunity is, Dan, you brought up inflation. Our ideal as contractors, our ideal clients for the most part, don't care about the price of gas. They have money. They're in other industries that, you know, or whatever it is. They don't care that a turkey was $8 more this year. It didn't affect their life. And so I think if we're marketing to the right clientele, we're really doing our job, you know, leveling up our experience for people and our service. I think those are huge. I think another threat is not paying people enough money. I think, guys, production sales right now for most contractors that have their shit together, sales is not an issue.
Yeah.
It's operations. I mean, who did we interview yesterday? Sold 3.7.
Abbott.
It was Anthony Abbott. That's right. So on the podcast, guys, it's coming out. Anthony did, he sold 3.7 and he was able to produce a million and he's booked, you know, a lot through 2022. So sales is easy. It's really easy to sell at the highest rates because honestly, most contractors aren't calling people back.
Yeah. That's a good point too. It's kind of like where I was with the limiting belief. I've talked to a lot of guys locally that, you know, citing material costs and inflation and general drains on people's economies and shit, they didn't want to raise prices. I raised my price 3 times this year because it's like, fuck it. Like, this is the time. Everything is going through the roof. Gas is like 50% more, all this crap. So I'm just like, I'm going to jump on that gravy train and set the new bar for myself because then I'm there. Then my customers are conditioned for it. My marketing and everything is in tune with it. So it's like, just find the opportunities and exploit them while the wind's at your back. Because like you say, shitstorm's brewing at some time. It always is. And having been through a couple of them at this point, it's nice to have the front end prepared when it hits.
Yep. And I would also say during this time when it's easy to make money, bank some money because when the floor falls out of this thing, a lot of the guys that are really struggling, they're going to be tired of it. They're not going to, this is what happened in the last recession. Like there's a lot of companies that were able to grow by acquiring other companies. So if you have cash, I mean, I know guys that, you know, bought businesses that were 60, 80 years old for like $50,000. They bought the freaking database and turned it into a couple million in sales within 18 months.
Yeah. I grew up in Michigan near where Kellogg's is. And in the Great Depression, their number two, Post was the number one cereal company. And recession hit, Post fucking curled up in a ball in the corner and tried to ride it out. Kellogg's went apeshit with their marketing. And they've never looked back. They've been number one forever. So it's like just, you know, adversity fears the brave or whatever the fucking saying that is. It's like just go for it because everyone else is soft and just push them aside and get after it.
Yep. All right. Rodney, what's up, Pags? Good to see you, buddy. 2021, my average gross profit was 42%. What do I need to evaluate in order to hit 50% gross profit this year? You don't got to evaluate nothing. You just got to take action, brother.
Yeah. If charge.
That's you know, go to that job costing sheet that we have. And every time you do a bid right now, just plug in what it's going to take to do it, put the multiplier where it needs to be, and sell it at a 50%. I'd sell it at a 60. That way, when things go wrong, you know, and you're over budget a little bit and things like that, or you got a psycho customer, you're still going to realize when all said and done somewhere around 50. So it's really the only thing you got to evaluate is your choice to, you know, double what it cost you. And Rodney, one, and Dan, weigh in on this too, but like, because I know you've played around with this. Rodney, one of the ways I know in painting, you can play with the multipliers. Like I would mark my labor up, you know, 70, 80%, 100%. I don't mean 70, 80%. What I'm saying is like, if I'm charging 20, if I'm paying a guy $25 an hour, I'm charging 100 for him is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay? Rod's got a couple of follow-ups, Tom, that maybe you haven't seen, but so he's doing what happens a lot, right? He's bidding stuff at 50 and then, by the time it gets to the sausage maker is in the low 40s. So that's just a job costing issue, Rodney. You know, it's like checking your production rates. I don't know. I can't remember. I know you told me what estimating software you use. But what I do, even if it's just a fucking bedroom, something that's just small, break it into the phases and against your hours and just double check it, see where you're at. It's like you're just losing time somewhere and you're looking over it because like we're optimists when we look at stuff. It's like I always bid jobs. Like my team just did a bunch of coke and I can just be superheroes. It's like they can't do that for 7 months straight, you know? So it's like be, you know, realistic when you're quoting your hours. But the job costing, just break it down by part, analyze it, adjust it, and you'll get up to 50 and then you can start going higher.
Yeah, we used to do a lot of give and take with our crews. Like we job cost a project and from time to time I'd be like, hey guys, what's it in my software? It's telling me it's an hour to paint a 6-panel door or whatever, right? And so we'll just check on that, you know? And I had my guys come to me once, Rodney, and they're like, hey, you give us too much time on doors and not enough time on baseboards. And so I literally went into the production rates of my software and I just changed, I adjusted the times. That way we were more accurate. And I think it's also what the original question he asked was, what do I need to evaluate? I would evaluate how you're setting up the project too, the expectations with your guys and coaching them up and actually having a real good pregame plan going in. I know the minute we started doing pre-job planning, our gross profit went up like 10% immediately. It was crazy. So
yeah, all the stuff you don't think about that takes up time on the pre-job, right? Loading the van up, getting the materials, playing with the freaking owner's dog, moving crap around. It's like that's the stuff that gets lost, the cleanup, the setup, and just track everything related to a project and make sure it's accounted for in the hours.
Yeah, Jake asked the same thing of Rodney there, right? Of Pegs, do the guys have clear time targets and goals? And it's not enough, guys, to just go, like, I learned this from one of my old business partners where he would, if Dan was on the crew, he'd go, Dan, you have that powder room to paint first thing today. You need to be done with it by 11 a.m. And mm-hmm. he's completely done. And then at the halfway point, he would go in there and he would be like, hey, how we doing? And whenever we asked how we doing to a guy in the room, the real question was, where are you at with the hours?
Yeah, it's a nice way to say it.
Honey, this is one of those things that the more back to we meaning us and our people, we will all assign more importance to things that we talk about more and put our focus on. So if you're constantly talking about the hours and things like that, and I don't mean like in an annoying way, but just go, hey, Joe, where are we at in that room right now? You got 4 hours to do it. We're 2 hours in. Where are you at? Like the more you're talking about that, the more you're going to get the results that you want too. You're going to keep it on everyone's consciousness. Hey fighters, hopefully you got some value today from the Q&A episode and that you learned something that you can apply in your business. If you have a question, send an email to help@thecontractorfight.com and in the subject line, put the word podcast and we will get that question. We'll answer it on air for you. And also don't forget to share this with another contractor. Give us a review on iTunes, wherever you listen to this. Super appreciate you hanging out with us here today. You guys rock. We got to roll. We're out.